Hello, everybody, and welcome to MILF Talk. I'm Sophie, and I'm full of it. Free advice, that is. My name is Sophie Venable, and I am a psychologist, a life coach, an author, and a mother of two. Darling girls. MILF stands for Make Your Life Fabulous, and we like to talk about anything here from parenting and money issues to sex and dating. And today, we're actually talking about sex therapy. My guest today is an MFT, marriage and family therapist, who specializes in sex therapy and is currently working toward becoming a certified sex therapist through ASECT. And so please welcome Shireen Hariri.
Thank you.
She's hot, too.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. So this is actually part two. If you're listening to this and you haven't listened to the one before this, you should, because it will sort of give you a little, we'll recap a little bit as far as, you know, why would somebody seek a sex therapist, you know, in general, if you're having issues, why do most people walk into your office?
Yeah, I mean, by the time I see people, usually they're coming in because they have sexual issues that they've not been able to talk with their therapist about, you know, and I said this last time that, you know, a lot of the times we see people who've been seeing a therapist, a regular therapist who doesn't specialize in this for many years and felt completely no space in the therapy to bring up sexual topics. The therapist didn't ask them. They didn't feel comfortable bringing it up. Maybe they got the feeling the therapist would kind of cringe at certain topics.
I've had my gynecologist cringe at certain topics. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, you're looking down there and you can't talk about sex?
Yeah. Well,
it's
that's
crazy.
A big deal. This is something that we talk about a lot, which is that a lot of doctors and gynecologists and people who deal with cancer or whatever, they're not usually able to say, okay, well, what is sex going to be like with this?
What is
this thing that's happening?
Right.
And so when I see these people, they usually have had that experience where someone just didn't address it at all. And they thought, okay, well, I need to talk about this. Where am I going to go? Let me Google sex therapy, you know, in their city of choice.
And if they're lucky, they find you.
If they're lucky, very, very lucky, they find me.
Because you make it safe for people, right?
That's the goal. The goal is
vagina. She's not even blinking. Yeah, there you go.
just barely makes
hand jobs,
impact.
Oral sex. Look at her. Nothing.
All of it. All
she's
of
cool
it.
As a cucumber.
Yep. All of it. There is pretty much, and I say this to a lot of people, they come in and they say, oh, I'm afraid to say this about my sex life. And I say, I promise you there is nothing that you can say that's even going to make me blink.
Right.
You know, unless it has to do with abuse or something. That might make me blink. But penis, vagina, oral sex, butt sex, whatever, kinky, whatever.
Group sex. All good.
Et cetera, et cetera. As long as it's safe, sane, and consensual.
Safe, sane, and consensual.
Yeah. Right. As well as adult, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Which is consensual.
Yeah. Consensual.
That's the consensual
Legally
part.
Consensual as well as otherwise consensual.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So what I see a lot of is these people did not have anywhere else to go. They're desperate to talk about this thing. They need someone who knows what they're talking about, and they come to a sex therapist. And they feel eventually safe, I would think. I mean, you know, my clients can tell you one way or the other for sure.
Sure. But we won't call them because that's a privacy issue.
That is a privacy issue.
That would be unethical, but thanks.
Absolutely. There's no way I would tell you anything about them.
You get a Yelp review?
Yeah.
Some people do. I've seen Yelp reviews on, you know,
it definitely happens. But yeah, of course, therapists, I mean, this is something probably important to say. Therapists, and in particular sex therapists, have a very strict set of guidelines and boundaries ethically and legally. So, you know, a therapist worth their salt, an MFT or a sex therapist or whatever, is never going to have any sexual contact with you,
right?
Is never going to break your confidentiality unless it's legally mandated or needed for some reason.
Right.
And there's all sorts of stuff around that.
Sure. That's if a child or an elderly person or somebody unable to protect themselves cannot protect themselves, you are legally required to step in.
We are legally required to step in and break confidentiality.
Yeah.
And in addition, if a client, if someone is in my office and they're actively suicidal or homicidal, of course, if the court makes me, you know, open my file, then I have to comply with that. But other than that, most therapists are pretty rigidly protective of their clients' confidentiality.
Sure.
And with sex therapy in particular, because it's such sensitive stuff.
Yes. Know? You have to feel safe.
You have to feel safe.
So let's say somebody, you know, we covered a lot of, you know, un, unusual circumstances in the last, you know, in the last podcast. And I was thinking it would be nice to maybe look at some common issues that might not seem like something you necessarily need to pick up the phone and call a sex therapist about, but mm-hmm. you know, things that might be kind of worrisome in a marriage back and forth, like an interest, maybe somebody thinks their husband has too much of an interest in porn, mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. maybe you know, well, let's start there.
Great.
Maybe not necessarily that they're in your office, you know, but what do we think is too much porn? You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the first thing to say about that is health and safety first. So if anything at all is ever happening around porn that is putting anybody at risk of injury, so a man masturbating too much could get raw, he could get sores, he could actually injure his penis, he could...
That'd be a lot of masturbation.
It's a lot right? of masturbation. Right. It would take, well, it depends on the sensitivity.
Right. You don't want to just go to your husband and say, you know, you're going to get sores from doing that, because then you're going to be like the priest at school. So
yes.
maybe not use that approach.
Yes.
But yeah, okay.
Yes. Let's back it up a little bit.
But that would be an extreme case, right?
That would be an extreme case. That would be an extreme case.
You don't want to be that person.
No, you don't want to shame him yeah. for doing something natural, yeah. you know. But there is such a thing as too much porn.
Yeah.
And, injury is sort of the primary guideline for that.
Interesting.
But the second part of it is to just recognize that when you are in a partnership, the partnership includes the needs and desires of both partners. So if you get married and you, let's say you're a man and you marry a woman who thinks that porn is cheating.
Mm, yes. Many women do.
And it is what it is to a point. You know, by the time I see them, this might have already exploded into something where she caught him looking at some very
right.
normal looking porn, but she was very, very injured by that.
But a common day to day thing in many marriages might be the man is looking at porn, let's say even a pretty normal, healthy amount of porn, like whatever, and he's got to close it and clear his thing and clear his cachet,
browser,
and, you know, and all that
history,
stuff. And if he gets caught, there's this moment of like, you know, how could you do that? And that feels like cheating, and I need you to not do that anymore.
Yeah.
So then he hides more.
Yes.
Right?
He can hide more. I mean, so this is actually a very tricky thing. Porn use right now, there's a lot of talk about sex addiction, porn yeah. addiction, even internet addiction, I think. And, you know,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Get off that phone.
Wait, I need to Facebook this.
Yeah. So this is a huge topic. And,
yeah.
and the difference between something that's pathologically problematic and something that's kind of healthy and normal is defined sort of by society, sort of by each couple, and sort of by this general overarching understanding that we have to leave a little bit of space for people's sexuality to be more than just, you know, missionary sex twice a week at these times and very structured. So what is the difference between healthy porn use and not healthy porn use?
Let's compare it to something like alcohol. Like when is alcohol considered a problem? When it's affecting your relationships, your life, it affects your
negatively
life legally.
When they're negative consequences.
Right.
Yeah. And it's very, very similar. You know, when we talk about problematic drinking, problematic eating, problematic exercising, problematic drug use, problematic sex, all of those things are based on the line between...
I would like to problematically exercise. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
When we talk about any of that stuff, go ahead, sorry.
It's a whole other podcast. Yeah. But so this is something that is really, really defined by what feels healthy, what is not getting in the way of your life, what isn't negatively affecting your relationships, your health, your legal status, your job, any relationships. And so porn use, as an example... If one person in a partnership is masturbating to porn so much that he or she is ignoring their partner, that's a problem. If the partner starts feeling ignored, whether or not she thinks it's, let's just say he's the one masturbating to porn, she's the one feeling ignored, it's problematic, not because he's an addict, but because they're in a relationship and they need to respect each other's needs.
Right.
So what do you do with that? You know, okay. why is he masturbating so much to porn? Let's say it's not. I mean, everybody, let's assume that there's a norm of maybe a couple times a week for a few, several minutes. And,
right, and that's not, doesn't have to be everybody's norm.
No,
that's
but just, let's just
we're
assume,
just throwing that out there.
Let's assume that this couple agrees.
That's what the wife thinks
let's
is normal.
Let's assume that's okay. what she thinks is normal. It's okay to do this, but when you're doing it every day for an hour and we're not having sex.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
Yes.
There's no moral judgment that this is about. It's just like she's feeling neglected. She's feeling like he'd rather be with himself than with her. And how is that a healthy relationship?
And if you're in a long-term relationship, you know, the urge to chase, the urge to make sex happen, you know, it's going to dwindle down when you're not in the first, you know, couple of years anymore, especially and you're living together and you're seeing each other every morning and every night.
Yep.
So it's kind of important to keep a little sexual tension going for yourself.
Absolutely.
And if you're taking care of that, which can seem like really not a big deal, you know, it's sort of like, well, we didn't have time to have sex and, you know, so I just took care of it real quick. And it's like, I get it, not a big deal, but if it's making it so that now you're only having sex once a month,
exactly,
it can be a piece of the puzzle that can be the puzzle of your intimacy.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So
if let's say we're talking about that same couple, we have to a sex therapist. We have to assess, okay, what is really happening here? Is he not sexually interested in her for some reason? And there could be a whole spectrum of reasons why that is. She could. You know, I was just talking to another therapist who's talking about a client who didn't want to have sex with his wife because she wasn't clean enough, you know, and he didn't know how to tell her and et cetera. And that comes up a lot. That's a big thing.
Interesting.
And we talk about, okay, why is it that you can't tell your partner that her vagina might need a little extra attention in one way or another?
Or she might need to go to the doctor.
She might need something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happens. It happens a lot. And she might not know it because she's not really sitting there with her vagina in a mirror and smelling and tasting everything every day, you know? So it's kind of
he
up to him.
He needs to speak up.
He does. Especially if it's making him avoid her sexually
and
intimately and go be with porn and therefore start doing that more and more. And then she's feeling neglected, et cetera. And she doesn't understand. So, you know, to any couple who's listening to this, please talk about things.
And
as
you can
soon as
say
possible.
It in a way you can say, I think, you know,
honey,
there might be something going on because you don't smell
something's
like
different.
Your normal, lovely self.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So
I know this is always a fun topic to talk about vaginal smells, but you know, that is a part of life.
That's part of life.
Yeah.
And what if that like was the beginning wedge of something that went on for years?
Exactly.
How tragic.
Exactly.
You know, when it's like a couple days of an antibiotic, boom, you're good.
Absolutely.
I mean,
and not to mention all the other side effects that come with something with an infection that isn't taken care of, like pain, vaginal pain, and whatever, depression.
The whole thing can just be a spiral. That and that's the problem when we don't have a language and we don't have a communication around these things. I mean,
things spiral a lot.
I mean, some women might be like, honey, I just kind of wish you'd shave down there a little bit more and I'll pay more attention to it. I mean, these are, you know, I think that the problem is that everything works kind of well when you're dating, and that's probably why you got married, and it's simple. And then, you know, when you don't have the same chemicals going, keeping things, getting you into the bedroom,
the novelty,
everything becomes a little bit more complicated. And I do think that it's really, it's sort of your responsibility in the relationship to, one, make sure, I mean, women can masturbate too much too, you
absolutely.
Know, but sometimes that tends to get them going. There can be a different, consequence, you know?
Yeah.
You know, your responsibility is to kind of keep yourself interested, keep yourself interesting, you know, keep yourself clean and really like be interested in what, you know, what turns your partner on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the ideal. Of course, what we're dealing with always is that people aren't born knowing how to do all this
stuff.
No. We're born as babies with no training.
That's why people like you and me want to get the word out.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, so like all a person has is what their parents have taught them or shown them or what society has taught them or shown them. And if what that means is that she doesn't really think about these things or that things, we're here to say, okay, well, let's consider the possibility that something needs to be different. So, you know, with a couple like this who there's this rift that has been created because one thing didn't get talked about. Now, years later, they're not having sex and he's just with his porn all the time.
Yeah.
Now his neural pathways are all about this other thing.
Yes.
And she's just feeling awful. And then one of them cheats. And then there's all this other, all these sure. ripple effects of that.
Sure. Because the because what happens too when somebody is taking care of things themselves is mm-hmm. that it does become easier. That's easier than mm-hmm. than trying to create intimacy and, you know, that's work.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like we haven't had sex in a while and now I want to come on to you and I could get rejected. And mm-hmm. I mean, there's just a whole ball of wax there that yeah. is a lot of work. And
it is.
Sometimes, you know, men can really just get into their work and kind of take care of that and it's just easier. And mm-hmm. and so the other it can be work to build this back. And so that's where hopefully, you know, if you're listening to this early on,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can kinda like throw pennies in the bucket like as you go along. Like
yeah.
kind of fill the jar, fill the intimacy jar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I guess really if your partner is looking at a lot of porn, mm-hmm. I guess the question would be, you know, what do you think is normal? Do you think zero porn is normal? Do you think mm-hmm. twice, you know, a little bit here and there is normal? Do you think mm-hmm. it's okay to look at it as long as he's not, you know, actually coming,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he's just sort of creating tension so that he'll come bring it home to you,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
What's okay? You gotta,
yeah.
Porn is everywhere. There's this thing called the internet.
There's no escaping it.
There's no getting away from it. So if you think they're just never going to look at it,
yeah,
that's crazy. Like a pop-up's going to come by. It's just going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, I don't know if I'm going to retell the story exactly correctly, but there was some university that wanted to do a study on people who use porn versus people who don't. And they had to scrap the study because they couldn't find it was men who use porn, men who don't. They couldn't find any man who had never seen porn or didn't use it with any regularity whatsoever. So
there you go.
There's
and those are scientists who are getting paid to find those people.
Yeah, they're looking hard. But they didn't find anybody. So, you know, here's this reality. And I would say this to any couple that, you know, you guys probably, or not you guys, a couple who is dealing with these issues probably didn't talk about this in advance. Maybe it was embarrassing. Maybe it was the honeymoon phase, whatever it was.
Sure.
Maybe they didn't know that each other's farts smelled by the time they moved in together. whatever it is.
Oops.
Good thing to know. But, you know, you start living together and being with somebody and normalcy, quote unquote, and sort of the structure and daily life sort of stuff sets in and mm-hmm. nothing's been talked about. So For the people who think that there should be no porn whatsoever, you know, it's going to get tricky. It is going to get tricky.
That's going to be challenging for you.
If it's zero porn is acceptable.
Right. And you're probably asking your spouse to sort of live a double life.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't. What I do want to be sure to say is that in the healthiest version of a relationship, where a man, I'm gender stereotyping a lot.
Yeah,
obviously,
that,
there's
yes.
so much more.
We can
more
go this
to
both
this.
Ways. Yeah. There can, yeah. Yes, we'll flip this around. We'll talk about a chick who's into BDSM. Okay, we'll go that way.
Perfect.
All right. So
but what if we're dealing with this situation where he wants to do that, and normally what we need to look at is, okay, what is it about their sex life that isn't allowing him to primarily be focused on their intimacy?
Right.
You know, and like I said that before, but this is a really complex thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a reason why it's called sex therapy and not just, hey, we're just talking about this. Because
right.
we have to dive into all sorts of layers of the stuff.
Well, let's say it's not at the point of it. What if it's just sort of a kind of minor rift? What if they, you know, they are having sex and he's like, she mm-hmm. is my primary. She mm-hmm. is, of mm-hmm. course. That's mm-hmm. what you know. But I just like to look at naked women sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so to him, he's feeling like, God, this is really normal. I'm still yeah. having sex with my wife. I'm mm-hmm. still doing this. And she's so mad at me, you know? And
yeah.
then, and eventually this is going to, This is, like you said, the, for the person that thinks that there should be zero porn, it's going to be tricky.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, and that's not to say that a man is not capable of saying, okay, I just won't look at porn.
Absolutely, but, right. But so this is the conversation.
You think his buddy's not going to show him something or send him an email? It's like, oh, I can't open this.
Something's going to be somewhere that is going to be a sexualized image of a woman.
You know, it's going to happen.
Live it up. But so what does that woman do with that? If she doesn't, she can't. So this becomes about talking to her about what are her expectations? Where do they come from? Is there room? What, sometimes I've even said, hey, okay, why don't you guys make your own porn that he can watch?
Interesting. Oh, you know? That's interesting. Because take some pictures of her.
Take pictures of her. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like create an erotic template around that. It can be a lot of fun.
Oh, you're smart.
That's why they pay me. So, you know, let's think outside the box of ways to make this better. Mm-hmm. And because he might have a higher sex drive than her. He might be like men tend to think about sex more than women, but you know, sometimes that's not true at all.
I don't know, that's entirely true.
Yeah. Well, in the big picture.
In the big picture.
Certainly you and I might be a little different. But that being said, in a very kind of typical situation, we have to come up with ways for both of them to be a little bit more in communication, a little bit more open and honest. If she's feeling like, if her deal is that him watching porn means that he doesn't find her attractive,
yes,
even if they're having sex.
That is usually the core.
That is usually the core.
That is sort of like, but why do you have to look at her? And you're only supposed to see me naked.
Yeah.
And you're like, and it's sort of the separating out of you know, that he's looking at the feminine. He's looking at women. He's you know, but he's in love with her.
Yeah.
You know. Maybe they can look at it together.
Exactly.
You know, that can be really fun. Look at it together.
It can be really fun, but there's something I think that's also important, which is that a person's sex life to be completely revolving around one other person in itself, it doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. But if he's not that guy who is completely 100% sexually focused on her and nothing else.
Right.
Then she might have to learn to give him a little space to, you know, have sexuality that isn't all about her.
Right. And she, see, okay, here's an issue that I find is that when women allow their sexuality to be anything outside of their guy, it's usually a celebrity.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Or some completely, you know, unattainable, like, you know, 18-year-old barista that's not really
sort of
real,
yeah,
you know, like some kind of really unavailable kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, essentially a lot of, you know, all that porn is too. It's like, these are just models that he doesn't know.
Exactly.
You know, but in general, I think we have a tendency as females to, once we're in a relationship, kind of, we're okay with that, with our partner kind of having the ownership of our sexuality as a whole, as opposed to just, you're the only person I actually have sex with.
You know? Yeah.
But men don't tend to do the same thing. And so we're like, but I'm all about you. Why aren't you all about me? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that's just wiring. And sociology, you know, wiring
sociology,
because of society.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and what can be really interesting is if you're giving your man a little bit of mental freedom around his sexuality that he's already had. I mean, he was that way, like, you know, for years before you guys got married. It's not like, it's not like you walk down the aisle and all of a sudden his brain changed.
Right.
You know, so he might even be able to allow you a little room in your mind, and that might be kind of interesting for you to explore yourself. And if I was really honest with myself, is this the only man that I'm attracted to? Is this the only, you know, you know, not to get into the sort of the dangerous territory of like, oh, am I going to go cheat? I'm not talking about that.
I'm talking about,
can I even allow myself to think that this man is sexually attracted? Can I allow myself to be aroused by that notion? A lot of women don't.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah, it's an interesting.
It's embarrassing, but I really did not allow myself to fantasize about other people for like 10 years, unless like in my fantasy he was, you know, like dead or gone or something. You know what I mean? Like, and I know a lot of married women who say that.
Yeah.
And I'm serious.
I know you are.
It's almost embarrassing.
Well, you're bringing up a really important bigger picture issue, which is that, you know, what we're talking about in our society and our planet really is a lack of real ownership of sexuality at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah, your own.
Your own sexuality. Really, yeah. So, you know, I think women tend, this is all tendency, right? But tend to repress their sexuality more for various stigma reasons, religious reasons, whatever it is. So, you know, how to get both people in a couple and just everybody to get to a place where they're like, okay, this is what I actually like. This is what turns me on. Maybe this is where it came from wasn't the healthiest place, but maybe this is where it is right now. And that's fine. But being able to open a dialogue and explore and not just be this tightened, repressed body that walking through the planet.
Right, that gets to sort of express itself sexually one way.
Exactly.
You know, this way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and in a marriage, it can literally become like one way.
This tiny little.
We do this, then you touch me there, then we do this, then we do this, and then you come, and then I come, and then we're like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it loses its fun. I mean, if you're going to be with someone for a long time, there's got to be some kind of novelty, some kind of, because otherwise, unless you're both very, very into being very stable and structured and, you know, paced a certain way. But that's not most people. You know, most people need something a little bit different once in a while, if not pretty frequently.
Even to just at least to be able to talk about something
exactly.
else. You know.
Fantasize,
talk, explore. What would that be like?
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I mean, that works for a lot of people.
It does.
You know, just because a lot of people really aren't actually comfortable stepping out and doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really fun to talk about and it's really enough for them. And again, it's about that freedom in your mind, that freedom to actually be who you are and be known by your partner.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is what creates the intimacy.
Absolutely.
So let's say, so here, challenging example. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say the woman in the partnership, she really, you know, she wants to be a sub or a dom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had an example, or I think you said somebody just wanted to be spanked really hard, you know, and her husband didn't want to do it, you know, and understanding the psyche behind that, you know, that's not always related to abuse.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not my thing. I'm just saying it's not my thing, but I have no judgment about it. Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
Literally, not literally. it's not all
whatever
about that. I know. I don't understand. And I have not read 50 Shades of Grey, but I'd be really curious to know how, if that's come up in your room, you know, just as far as like bringing up conversations, because it's really kind of, blown the lid off of a subculture.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And I have a lot to say about this. This is.
Do you? Oh, yeah. Please go. Knock yourself out.
or not. Whatever.
Or not. Whatever. I don't know if you're into that. I think whatever.
I mean, so this is something I think a lot of people don't realize, that kink and BDSM are actually a really pervasive part of American culture and, in fact, much of the world. And 50 Shades of Grey certainly kind of opened the box up a little bit more, so to speak. But there's been this culture going on for years and years and years and years and years. I mean, just think about Betty Page and think about the kind of photography that she participated in. So, and then we can go way before that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Centuries before that, back to Roman times, back to.
There's a cave drawing of a dungeon somewhere.
I'm sure there is. And so, you know, human sexuality can involve all sorts of fun stuff, and it is important to recognize, I think, that, and this is really near and dear to my heart, that in the kinky community, in the BDSM community, there isn't a higher incident of abuse than in.
I think that's really important for people to understand
that is not.
That is not always born. It's not born necessarily of abuse.
Well, it's more, we like to think of it more as an orientation, you know, like there are things that you've oriented towards and maybe you were totally born with it. Maybe, you know, there was something that you saw once when you were feeling kind of horny and it sort of like merged into your template. Maybe that just opened up what was already there. Maybe it created it. Who knows?
And also the hypothalamus is your pain and pleasure center.
Yes.
It is both. That is one part of your brain that is actually responsible for both pain and pleasure.
Yes.
And so you don't know how people's neurons are.
You don't.
I mean, how difficult would it be for those two things to be combined. Yeah. You know, there's a fine line, and some people are riding on it.
Very, very, very true. So. And that's what happens. I mean, so whatever it is that brings someone to wanting to explore, fantasize, or actually do BDSM practice is whatever it is. As a therapist, you know, if someone comes in and they're feeling terrible about wanting to do this thing.
Mm-hmm. Then, or they're terrified that their spouse wants to. You know, what does this mean?
What does it mean? Yeah. So we start just by talking. Mm-hmm. We talk about, okay, what does it mean to you if you want this? And what does it mean to you, partner, if you don't want this, but your partner wants it? And so communication, it's all about the community and transparency and all of that. But let's just say a couple comes in and they have been talking it out, but they haven't gotten to a resolution and they need a little help.
Right.
So this actually happens a lot where a couple comes in and they're thinking about opening up, and it's often, not always, it's often that she wants to sub more. Mm-hmm. She wants him to be more dominant and to kind of slap her a little or spank her or, you know, whatever it is, pull her hair, which a lot of that in the BDSM community is actually pretty...
Pretty mild.
Yeah. But in a more quote-unquote vanilla community, it would be, oh, that's a big deal.
Right.
So... We talk about it. Let's say we talk about it, and she says, okay, to my question of what do you think it is that you're really looking for here, she usually, not always, comes up with, I just want to feel like I'm a woman and he's a man. I want him to be strong. I want him to be dominant.
They
want to
feel that masculine, feminine, the energy.
Dynamic, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it sometimes is that simple. And so they're hoping that him doing all these things would allow her to feel this femininity that she, maybe she's an attorney in her real life, you know, and she has to be tough and she needs someone to kind of...
Just make her feel like a girl.
Make her feel like a girl and kind of that almost like animalistic, like primal, you know, putting her, dominating her, you know.
Pinned like an antelope.
Pinned, exactly. That's a good one. So...
Boy, maybe I am into this.
Worth exploring.
Worth exploring.
Worth talking
hell,
to someone.
I don't like... My hands tied?
You don't have to have your hands tied.
I'm like, I need my hands. No. I'm touchy.
That's the thing. I mean, how perfect that you're even saying this. It's like, if you don't want your hands tied, okay. If you wanted to talk about why that is, what fear that brings up, we can talk about that. It might
it's
be
not
worth
fear,
knowing.
I just don't like it.
Then you don't like it.
Need my hands. I want to
Well,
I'm very tactile.
If you're tactile and you want to touch, then you don't tie up your hands.
Right.
Or you come up with some other way to be bound that doesn't that allows that freedom. So all about talking about
I'm
this.
Sure there's lengthy books on how to do these things.
There are some really, really good books that deal with kink and BDSM and non-monogamy and, you know, opening up your relationship. I'm not going to give any specifics because I don't want to be biased, but they're certainly out there.
That's what Google's for.
That's what Google's for. And I do tell my clients sometimes the ones that I like, but, I will say this. I mean, there is a book called Opening Up that's sort of a starting point, that talks about what it might be like to do all sorts of different things. So
it's, kind of, it's just sort of in general kind of,
it's an overview. I think it's a really great book. A lot of couples come in having read it, but not really knowing how to navigate all of this. So they need the negotiation. They need the help with the navigation.
I just really admire that. I just think I have so much respect for anybody who walks into your office, just because I love that. I love that they're putting an importance on it. You know, that they're saying, I want to do this. I want to honor my partner. I want more intimacy.
Yeah.
I want to be closer. We need help navigating this, you know, and we're not able to figure it out on our own. Or I have some ideas, but I don't want to be the leader. I don't want to be pushing. I want to know that she's okay. And, you know, or I want to know that he's not going to be angry about this later, or that, you know, he's going to feel safe, or, you know, I don't want him to feel like he's hurting me, whatever. Yeah. Any, all of the fears that people have, you know, it's sort of just to even have a third party say, hey, guess what? You're not alone. So sure. And there's ways that we could do this. And it's like, oh wow, we're not so crazy.
Exactly. Normalizing it is a good part of the process.
It's a huge part of it, right? It's a huge part of everything, you know, normalizing things, just going, oh wow, you mean you're human?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Totally interesting. Yeah, it is a really interesting thing, and it actually is very, like, it really moves me when a couple comes in and, in honoring their relationship, wants to get help to just figure this out, you know, before all this stuff hits the fan and they've spiraled and they're almost about to break up.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to do that. And it can look like anything. I mean, it could look like I just want to be spanked a little bit and I'm afraid to really ask for that, or I don't know how to ask for that without hurting his feelings, or whatever that is.
Right.
Or making, vice versa. You know, maybe sure. he's the one that wants to be spanked and and even degraded, you know, for whatever
or
reason.
Choked. Choking kind of scares me. Like that whole, I know a lot of people are really into that, and I don't know if I could get over that. That would scare me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a big thing.
I'd have a limit.
You would. That would be a hard limit for you.
It would be really hard. Yeah. I'm really glad that. I'm really glad that hasn't come up.
Yeah.
But we can talk about it. If you need to talk about it.
Yeah. Talk about it. Fantasize about even.
Sure.
But
right.
Maybe not actually do it if it's not your thing.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. You talk about it.
Yeah.
You figure it out. Like, what are the things that you want to explore? What don't you? Whatever your red light stuff is, you know, whatever you need a safe word for, it's whatever it is.
A safe word.
You know?
It's true though, right? I mean,
it is true. You know, being able to recognize that we're all different. We all have whatever turns us on. We hope that we're healthy about it. We hope that we're aware and self-aware of our needs, our wants, what our erotic template is. When is it too far? When is it compulsive? When is it merging with some kind of a, you know, mental health issue like OCD, for example, compulsivity OCD?
Sure.
When is it something we need to really be concerned about, and when isn't it? And when I see a couple or even an individual who's like, I found this really kinky porn and I feel terrible about watching it. What do I do? I'm awful.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm bad. God's going to frown on me or whatever. It might not be God. It might be themselves or their conscience. So, you know, being able to like own who you are, know who you are, make an informed choice. Do I want to do this? Do I not want to do this? And look at the shame aspect of it, because that is sort of like, in my opinion, a core feeling.
It's a core issue around
when people
it, yeah.
walk into any therapist, but especially with sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have so much wrapped up, so much meaning wrapped
even
up.
Even if
in
you
it.
Think you don't, you do.
Even if you think you don't, you do. I say that to anyone who's listening. You know, it's good to examine it.
It's good to look at what you
absolutely.
You know. There's shame, and so many people have been molested. I mean, whether it was like serious. I shouldn't even qualify it. It's all serious.
Yeah.
Whether it was, you know, actual sex or penetration or even sometimes just touching or some, you know, just things that are inappropriate that make you feel violated.
Yes.
That is so common.
It really is
so common. It's almost hard to find somebody who hasn't at some point.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the shame in that is around the fact that it felt good, or that your nerve endings responded.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such an issue for so many people.
Yes.
That it's like if I could yell something from, you know, the top of a mountain, it would be like, it's okay if it felt good. That doesn't mean you liked it. It doesn't mean that you wanted to be present with that, or that you colluded, or that
it's your fault.
You know, and just this, you know, these 1 or 10 or 20 experiences of that in your lifetime can be so imprinting.
Yes.
That no matter how comfortable you are in your sex life, in your world, in your relationships, you know, there's always something, you know, there's always something to deal with, to untangle, to work through. And it's worth doing for your quality of life. If you're fine and you're happy and you're whatever, you know, it's like, don't change something that's not broken.
Yeah.
You know, but anything that is a stumbling block for you, or that puts you in a shame place, or that is paralyzing for you in any way, is worth exploring.
Yes,
it's worth exploring, and that's why, you know, that's the beauty of the safety of
sex therapy,
and couples therapy, and you know,
any therapy really,
any therapy really, because. And you know, there's good ones and there's bad ones. You know, not every therapist is going to be the greatest therapist for you or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you've had one bad experience in therapy, don't like throw it away. You know, don't write them all off.
Don't write them all off. There are good ones out there.
There's good ones.
People who are better fits. I do want to say something about this
for sure.
molestation and trauma thing. You know, the statistics that kind of get thrown around are that 1 in 3 women in her lifetime and 1 in 8 men in his lifetime will have some kind of a sexually violating assault-like, rape-like experience, molestation. I do think the numbers are a lot higher.
Oh, sure.
For both
those
men
are the
and
ones
women.
That are talking.
Those are the ones that are willing to admit it.
Yeah.
You know, but you get a room full of 100 people, and I would say probably 95 of them have had something like that happen, if not more. Maybe the other five had something so small that didn't even register.
Yeah, they can have a few of mine.
Yeah, you know, sure. Ditto.
You grow up in the valley, you're going to be flashed by some guy or grabbed by some guy. Oh, my God.
I barely noticed that stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, well, what are you?
Yeah.
I forget that's on the list.
It's like, you know. Yeah, but, you know, we all have our traumas. We all have something that's happened. We sometimes even don't register it. If there's anything at all that's going on inside your head, a person's head, that has to do with being violated, feeling powerless, feeling helpless, if you're a man, if you're a woman, you know, please ask somebody for help, because you don't need to go through your life feeling all those terrible feelings. It takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to sit in front of somebody and admit with any sense of feeling that this happened, but it will feel better when you get to the other side of it.
Yeah.
Your quality of life does improve. And there's so much tied into
this. Dramatic.
It's very dramatic. Yeah. I see it a lot. I've had a lot of people in front of me who have been severely, severely abused.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing to know about that is that for some people, it completely derails them.
Sure.
For some people, they're completely healthy about it, but it did create maybe a sexual template where they do want to be tied up or whatever it is. Or they have incest fantasies, or they have, you know, whatever it is that happened is what happened. But that's the long-term effect of it. What we're talking about is just getting to a place within yourself where you're okay with who you are and what your life has been.
Yes.
And we don't have to do this stuff alone. This is such an important thing, because so many people are walking around with sexual trauma.
Sure.
And that, by the way, does also include, like, if mom or dad had porn laying around but never touched you, never, you know.
Right, never did anything. Just anything that might have.
Anything that might have affected you in a way that created or shaped your sexuality negatively.
Right.
You know. You might
just need to talk about it. Like,
even if you're fine.
Sometimes you can talk about something one time and you go,
and it's done.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I just kind of said it out loud and could deal with it and just kind of, you know, put it in front of me and put it in front of somebody else. And we said, oh, okay, look at that. Instead of just having it filed way back in the recesses where it's nagging at you.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are things. I want to thank you for being here. And
my pleasure.
Do beautiful work.
Thank you.
And, you know, these last couple episodes that we've done here, we've talked about some sort of funny stuff and some very heavy stuff and everything in between. And I think that that what I would really want people to walk from these two podcasts and from hearing you is that it's the spectrum of sexuality is so broad for us humans, and you know, anything can be talked about with the right person, and that it's you know what I hope for people is a quality of life and an authenticity in your life and true intimacy in your relationships. And I think that you know, being comfortable with your sexuality and your partner's sexuality is just such an amazing part of having a genuine intimacy in your relationships.
Yes.
And I love that that's the work you do.
Me too.
And I thank you so much for being here.
It has been my pleasure.
Great. So you can find me on Facebook at Sophie Venable. You can find my tweets at MILF Talk, and you can find my book on Amazon. It's called MILF 101. Thanks so much for listening.